Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy your company, that's for sure. And folks, please go to our website, www.theunionedge.com. And when you get to the webpage, there's going to be a banner that pops up that'll take you to our store. You can get long sleeve t-shirts, short sleeve t-shirts, ball caps, knit caps, all kinds of other stuff. Look, not only are you going to look great wearing the Union Edge logo, because all the cool people have one, but you're going to be supporting the program, and we appreciate that very much. So go ahead. We appreciate it, and let us know what you think, of course. And if you want something new and exciting, let us know. We can see what we can do about getting that put into the store. But right now, joining me from Louisville, Kentucky, Kentucky AFL-CIO President Bill Lonergan. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, Charles. Great to be here. Thanks.
Bill, it is always a pleasure. I appreciate you being with us today. Hey, Bill, I wanted to get your take on something. You know, while Kentucky is not a right-to-work state, despite some of the best efforts of some really just people who don't like their own nose despite their face, you've been in Kentucky experiencing growth with the old Saturn plant, more jobs coming online, more people, right?
Well, actually, it's not the old Saturn plant.
Oh, okay.
That's in Tennessee. So not far off, Spring Hill, Tennessee. But, well, you know, the factories that we have making automobiles here in Kentucky are kind of running at full tilt, so to speak, Charles. And we've, you know, Kentucky is now the number three car-producing state in the United States. You know, we've got two very successful and large Ford manufacturing plants in Louisville. They have been making all those signature automobiles and Explorers and Escapes and all that stuff for many years, and now they've transitioned into making the Lincolns, those high-end vehicles that are, you know, selling pretty well, and then the truck plant as well, where they make a lot of the dual-wheel pickup trucks there, the big Ford pickup trucks, and as well as other heavy-duty trucks as well. And Charles, of course, we got the famous Corvette plant down in Bowling Green, and you know, that's been doing very well. Also, you know, producing those, you know, just unbelievable vehicles that, if you know, always come out of that plant. And of course, we got the Toyota plant up there in Georgetown, and they just started a whole new, pretty much, line or facility on there. On their place too to build the Lexus, so you know they're building the vehicles in Kentucky that are, you know, I guess you would say selling well, and some of them are, you know, high-end vehicles, whether it's the Corvette, you know, or the Lincoln or the Lexus now. And, you know, Charles, with the exception of the Toyota plant, the rest of the facilities here in Kentucky are, you know, organized and with the UAW. But I might say that, you know, our building trades workers enjoy great relations with every one of them, in fact, including Toyota, where we've just finished a large project under a labor agreement, as well as in Louisville with the Ford plants, where, you know, continual expansion and maintenance goes on and is, you know, done with the building trades union members that have always, you know, brought those projects in on time, on budget, and which, you know, is part of the whole production process. You know, the maintenance and the expansions have to work in concert with one another. And it's, you know, it's good to know how successful these operations are here in Kentucky, and how many people they employ and how many they re-employ, Charles. And I think when you were here for our convention, I think the announcement was that there was going to be another hiring at Ford for a couple thousand more workers. And Charles, that's already on top of multiple thousands that have not only, you know, been rehired post recession and layoffs, but additional workers that have come in as well. And of course, that's a great news for, you know, the state, for the economy, and for the people that are working there, their workers and their families, who can get a decent wage under good conditions with the collective bargaining agreement.
Right.
So, Yeah, Kentucky's been, it's an amazing story, and most people don't look at Kentucky as being a, you know, automobile powerhouse, but it certainly is, and the supply facilities are, you know, spread from one end of the state to the other that supply, whether it's the seating, lighting, wheels, rims, frames, you know, you name it, across the state, there are those type of supplier plants that are supplying each of these manufacturers like Ford and Toyota and General Motors.
Bill, let me ask you this. Down in Tennessee, specifically Chattanooga with the Volkswagen plant, IG Metall, which is a German auto workers union, is setting up a shop to work with the UAW here in the United States to unionize that facility. And I have the understanding that they're going to start working with the Mercedes-Benz and Audi and Porsche and the other plants that are down south. What's your take on this joint effort between the American Automakers Union and the German Automakers Union and organizing automotive facilities down south?
Oh, Charles, I think it's a wonderful development and, you know, here, so to speak, as far as, you know, looking at that relationship and that effort, because, Charles, as you know, these large corporations, whether it was Ford, General Motors,
right,
Chrysler, any one of these have had multinational operations for decades, all across the globe. If you ever, you know, look at the global reach or the amount of facilities that these companies, in fact, I believe most of them have a majority of their operations actually operate overseas. And also with foreign companies, from whether they be from Germany or Japan, wherever they are, you know, domiciled, so to speak, you know, they come to the United States. They have unions in their country of origin, i.e. Volkswagen,
right,
you know, Mercedes-Benz, mm-hmm, Porsche. Any one of these large automobile manufacturers that come out of Germany are unionized,
right,
under, you know, their, you know, their code of conduct, so to speak, where they have co-determination and they have union members and workers that sit on the boards of the corporations and help run the thing. And then in Japan as well, you know, they have you know, an extremely well-organized union movement as well. And they operate on what they call an enterprise union system, where they actually are, you know, the Toyota Workers Union, etc. So they come over here, and they're not organized when they land here. And, you know, it seems like a big hole in the system for workers, you know, that now the relationship between that, you know, union in the home country of the corporation that's here in the United States can, you know, talk to the workers here about how they do it there and assist in, you know, working with the corporation itself, to try and let these workers in America have the same voice that they have in Germany or Japan or any other, you know, other foreign country, whether it be France as well, you know. So if you look at the picture, it seems to be a very, you know, significant development and one that's probably a long time coming because, like I say, there's always been this, you know, transference of, you know, materials and parts and product around the globe by these global corporations. But our union movement has been kind of focused here in the United States and not effectively making those relationships. They have on certain occasions, but not to this degree where they would be, you know, almost operating in a partnership, you know, to try and, you know, bring the union movement from Germany or, you know, whatever other country to come here and to try and get the workers that are here engaged in the same way they are back in Germany, which is to a really much higher degree than it is here, where these unions are, you know, accepted as opposed to being opposed at every turn, where they are part of the corporate structure and the production process in a way that gives them ownership of their jobs and a real say-so in how things go. And boy, you know, seems to work pretty good. You know, you're talking about Volkswagen, Mercedes-Benz, and Porsche, and Audi. They all are in the same boat when it comes to this methodology. And now we can have the same kind of insight, you know, brought over to the United States for the unions here to work much more closely in partnership with those very well developed and very high functioning unions in these other countries.
You know, Bill, when we come back, I want to talk to you about what American auto workers in the southern tier auto plants are thinking when the German auto workers coming here to the United States are saying that not only are they making more than the German automakers or workers are making more than the folks working down south, but they're making even more than the people working up in Michigan. And we'll talk about that when we come back, okay? I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.
You are part of the American workforce, the most productive people in the world. You deserve the best. You deserve a union.
Hi, Mom. Is Claire's birthday party today? Me again, Mom. Where did I put my history book? Hi, sorry, forgot one last thing. Sometimes it's hard to concentrate. At school, I start looking out the window, and then I forget what I was supposed to be thinking about. I know it seems like I don't care, but I do. It's just difficult for me. Love you, Mom. Bye.
Join parents and experts at Understood.org, a free online resource about learning and attention issues to help your child thrive. Brought to you by Understood.org and the Ad Council.
Today, my new dad threw a barbecue.
I burnt everything.
Ah! And then we played catch.
I broke Mr. Lewis's window. And then, somehow, my hand.
My hand! And then my dad even let me drive his car.
The hospital's on the right!
It was a rough day.
It was a great day.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of kids in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Question of the day. How many honeybees are in a beehive? Answer, 55,000. But who's counting? Matt Willey, for one, a highly regarded mural artist, he's been commissioned during the past couple of decades to grace the walls of homes and businesses. And now he's asking you and me to commission 20 new murals by him in various cities, with each wall-size painting being different versions of a common theme, the good of the hive. In particular, these murals will include a total of 50,000 hand-painted honeybees. Willie was motivated by a brief encounter with a single honeybee a few years ago. The tiny creature was crawling slowly across his rug. She was dying, he says, and for some reason I hung out with her until she died. This wholly unexpected spiritual connection with a bee prompted him to do a bit of research, finding that when a honeybee realizes it's sick and could infect the hive, it immediately departs, flying away to die and to protect the health of the interconnected bee family. Bees don't just live in a hive, they are an integral, functioning part of it. The pulsing hive itself is alive, an organic body nurtured by and, in turn, nurturing every bee in the community. It dawned on Matt that this natural truth applies to our human communities as well. When we connect, we thrive, he realized, leading him to launch the Good of the Hive mural project. Using art, social media, film, music, and discussions, he and a happy band of travelers will swarm into communities for several weeks each to, one, raise awareness about the unique importance as well as some special problems of bees, and two, connect people to our human hive and the essential need to work for the good of all. This is Jim Hightower saying, to connect with Matt, the project, honeybees, and the idea of our shared community, go to thegoodofthehive.com.
You know how it goes. You're working on a grievance, filling out paperwork, a phone call comes in, somebody's got a problem. You get distracted. When you finally return to your office, there's a stack of messages to deal with. Two people waiting to see you. Pretty soon, that grievance you were tracking, gone. But now there's LaborTrax, the software solution for unions. LaborTrax standardizes and streamlines tracking management and contract compliance. Your work in progress is always at hand. Learn more about LaborTrax at www.labortrax.com.
Well, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy your company, that's for sure. Joining me now from Kentucky, we've got Bill Lonergan, president of the Kentucky AFL-CIO. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, Charles. Great to be here again.
Bill, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate it. You know, we've been talking about automobile manufacturers in Kentucky and elsewhere down south. My question is, German automakers, the employees, make more than the employees of Ford, Chrysler, GM, even up in Michigan, much less those employees down in the southern states who make less money than our friends up in Michigan. I mean, what is reaction, do you think, from the auto workers in Tennessee working on Volkswagen when they come to find out that their German counterparts are making 30-40% more than they are?
They probably wonder how they did it, I guess, as well as, Charles, on the other side, I'm quite sure that the CEOs and top managers aren't, compensated to the ridiculous level that the CEOs here in the United States are either. Charles, when you get down to it, it's almost a question of philosophy and how, you think what the benefit of the corporation and the enterprise really is and who should those benefits accrue to. And when you look at the German model, it's a lot more of a shared prosperity, one in which the workers get a higher level of, remuneration for their efforts based on the fact that they have, organization and that they're an accepted, part of the enterprise, not viewed as some, disposable product itself. And their, the union and the structure that they have is also, respected and accepted. And it's not to say that that's not necessarily the case here with all these other companies or anything, but the level to which, it's part of their culture and their, society is so much greater than it is here. And that's part of it, is that, the workers there can, strive and work together in an enterprise that actually, understands and respects their contribution at a much higher level. And the folks on the other end aren't, making, so much, and it's not out of balance the way it seems to be here. And I think, that shows that there's a more of a kind of a group, philosophy, or one in which says that if we have a successful enterprise, then workers should naturally, benefit at a much higher level and be, compensated so that they are happy and will continue contributing. Mm-hmm. And I think, we don't have that same mentality here. We've got the, temp worker mentality of, pay workers as little as possible and give them no benefits. And then when you're done with them at the end of the day, if you, don't call them back.
Right. Bill, for the life of me, I do not understand how some politicians can jump up and rant and rave about Volkswagen, for instance, who says, hey, we want a union in our workplace. This is our business model. We want employee contributions to the manufacturing process. We want their ideas, their suggestions. We want their engagement. We want our employees to be treated at the standard that we want to treat them. And how politicians can jump in there and just willy-nilly say, oh, no, you shouldn't be allowed to unionize. Isn't that interfering with the basic operation of a private company? And why wouldn't a politician want the increased tax base from higher wages to go back into the local economy?
Are you asking me that, Charles?
I'm serious. Go ahead.
It's the other side of the philosophy I just talked about, which was, the philosophy of having contributions from folks in a group identity and a group mentality, one that's getting the shared resources and shared benefits to one in which it's kind of winner-take-all and greed is the motivating element. And if they can pay those workers less money, then that's the idea of a good outcome for these folks. And you know, that's where the dividing line seems to be, and that's why these politicians who have this vested interest, some of them themselves billionaires, got to jump in the fray, you know, and make sure that the corporations that are in there, in our country or in their state, can make, you know, enormous profits, while the workers and everybody else gets as little as possible. You know, that seems to be the way it looks, and I'm not saying that's exactly the same situation all over, but, you know, when you look, when you compare the two mentalities, the two systems, the two philosophies about, you know, what a business enterprise is supposed to produce and what the capitalist system is supposed to produce, you run into this dividing line. And, you know, when the German companies come to the United States, yeah, they've run into it pretty hard, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. And they're not the only ones. But you know what? I will tell you this, that when it's all said and done, the company wins, the naysayers lose. You look at IKEA here in the United States, Wedgwood, their manufacturing division. You know, the politicians fought it tooth and nail. And the International Association of Machinists, working with the company from Sweden, organized the work site, and the entire community benefits from that. You know, so...
Here, here.
You know.
So, you know, and of course, you know, we've had limited success with some of the you know, foreign or companies that have come in, and only because, you know, it seems like they've, you know, put themselves in places where a union tradition is certainly not, you know, the strongest, and that has been kind of the prevailing mode of operation. But I do think that, you know, they recognize that there's, you know, benefits to be had for both the workers and the company if they have, you know, organization and such. And maybe they'll be changing their tune at some point and being a little more cooperative, like Volkswagen has been. And, you know, we've struggled with Nissan, but we, you know, also have, you know, other facilities in the south, in Spring Hill, which has a union. So it's kind of a mixed bag. But with our foreign, you know, corporations, they've pretty much set up shop in the very recent past, and it takes time for folks to, you know, really figure out how to organize these things sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if the company is compliant and is, you know, cooperative, then it takes a whole lot less time. But if we go to the American model, which is to fire, intimidate, surveil, and do all that stuff to workers when they try to organize, then you'll have a protracted organizing and a protracted struggle.
Absolutely. Listen, Bill, we're coming towards the end of it. Before we go, how do we find out more about the Kentucky AFL-CIO?
Okay, at the website, we have AFLCIOKY.org, and our Facebook page is KYAFLCIO.
Absolutely. And, you know, Bill, you know, we've been down there a couple of times. We appreciate it. One of the things I just want to say is in Kentucky, you guys, you grow bourbon, or you make bourbon, and it's all union made, and I got to tell you, I'm very proud of that, and the next time we come down, we're going to have to go to all those different places where our union brothers and sisters are and sample some of those products.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's quite the tourist attraction, Charles, and, you know, from Wild Turkey to Four Roses, you know, you have just distilleries dotting the landscape, so to speak, and they have really put a lot of resources into their tours and that outreach and their facilities where they have visitor centers and such. And it's a great time, and it's a great time of the year actually right now for that type of you know, driving through the countryside and hitting the distilleries that are nestled in these hollows down here.
Absolutely. And the thing that I think is very wonderful, and I'm very thankful to the state of Kentucky, is when you're coming up on the exit, it tells you which distilleries at that exit.
Hey, you got to know your way around, Charles.
There you go. I mean, you know, it's great for tourists like me. Bill, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate it, brother Ed. We look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you. Have a great Thanksgiving, Charles, to you and everybody.
Same to you and all of yours. Thank you. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.